It's stranger than fiction, the idea that you might wake up one day and simply not know your closest friends and family. But it was real life for one London actor when his medication caused his brain to turn delusional. This is the story of Abby Morgan and her partner of 18 years, who could recognize absolutely everyone except her. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Now, today's story isn't exactly a crime, but I think there's a chance that you might be interested in the same weird stuff that I am, and this definitely caught my interest from the moment I saw the headline about it. Abby Morgan's husband woke up and didn't remember her. Abigail Louise Morgan was born in 1968 on the South Shore of Wales in Cardiff. Her father was a theater director and her mother was an actress, and Abby first thought to follow in her mother's footsteps. But then in college, she found a love for drama and decided to become a writer. She was creating plays and television scripts by 1998 and received the first award nomination for her work in 2002. We Americans might know Abby best for her screenplays for movies like Brick Lane, The Iron Lady, and Suffragette. She's been on panels with actors like Stellan Skarsgård, won 2 BAFTA awards and an Emmy, and is considered to be one of the great screenwriters. But Abby's not actually the main character of this story. It's her partner, Jacob Kruszewski, 45 years old, whom she'd been with for almost 2 decades and had 2 children with. He was an actor, and the first time they met, he made her laugh so much that she peed a little. Here's Jacob in a short comedy movie called Tommy the Tungsten Robot.
Hello, Tommy.
Hello, Keith. Isn't it a nice day?
Yes, it's a lovely day.
May I have a Mars bar?
That'll be 40p, please, Tommy.
May I pay you with nuts and bolts?
He'd been battling multiple sclerosis and was involved in a clinical trial for some new drugs to treat the condition. But he had a terrible reaction to them one day in 2018, and Abby came home with sushi to find him lying on the bathroom floor of their London house. She thought maybe he'd fallen asleep while trying to cool down on the bathroom tile, but then she noticed his lips were blue. Was he wearing blue lipstick? Then she saw the blood around his mouth. At that moment, under pressure, she couldn't remember if she was supposed to dial 911 or 999. The paramedics, seeing all of the medication in the bedroom, wondered if Jacob had tried to take his life. Jacob was rushed to the hospital, so seriously in trouble that doctors told Abby he could die within the day. They just didn't know what was wrong with him. It wasn't meningitis, and it wasn't hepatitis. He was having repeated seizures, and none of the tests doctors were doing showed what the issue was. It was the kind of thing that needed a specialist care. So after 2 weeks, Jacob was transferred to the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery in London. Jacob had always told Abby she was a terrible nurse when she was caring for his MS at home, but here at the hospital, he called her kind, caring, and loving. The nurses were delighted for her, but she knew something was going on with his memory or his brain. Doctors finally determined that Jacob had anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis, inflammation of the brain caused by antibodies that lead to psychosis and delusions. They hooked him up to a plasma exchange machine that attempts to rid the old plasma of the antibodies. They filled him with steroids, an immunosuppressive medication. But even under the specialized care, his brain became inflamed and his body began to shut down. Doctors eventually had to put him on a ventilator, leaving him unable to speak for 6 months. And then, as his organs shut down, they had nothing left to do but induce a coma. Abby sat at the hospital waiting room for weeks and then months, watching patients come and go as Jacob lay silently. It was only later that Abby remembered a night she ran lines with Jacob as he was preparing for an acting role, and he kept missing words and sentences she knew he knew perfectly. It was only later that she found out he'd called his doctor days before the collapsing incident in the bathroom and told him about some incredibly scary symptoms he was having. It was only later that she found out that the monthly injection Jacob took for his MS was the culprit and had caused the same issues in 21 other people. Doctors warned Abby that when Jacob eventually woke up, he wouldn't be the same. His brain didn't look like a normal brain anymore. She remembered the way he used to be, his love of cured meats and his infectious laugh and the unnecessarily expensive hoodies he liked. When he finally woke up from his coma on his own, opened his eyes and then sat up and then smiled and then began eating, Abby noticed a look in his eyes she hadn't seen before. When she called him babe, she felt like he looked at her sternly. where he smiled at their children, he only nodded at her. When he noticed her filming him on her phone, joyful over his steps to recovery, he seemed annoyed. When she said goodbye at the hospital to take the children home, he flat out ignored her. A friend came to visit one day, and Jacob said to Abby, "Can you wait outside? Wait outside by the door, please." The friend looked embarrassed, like you do when you witness a fight between a couple, but Abby did as she was told. She told her sister she felt she was being ignored. She cried at night and in the car and to anyone who would listen, including her local barista. But it all came to a head when she brought a balloon and cake to Jacob on Valentine's Day. They were the type who always celebrated the day, whether it be with a cheap burger or expensive jewelry. But Jacob looked uncomfortable and awkward for her this time. And then he looked irritated as the nurse told him to give his wife a rose the staff had procured for him. "Go on," she said, "give your wife the rose." And he replied, "She's not my wife." Over the coming days, Jacob allowed photos of his family to be pinned all around his bed, but insisted the one of Abby could only go on a wall if it was stuck behind a sink, out of sight. When he would see a photo of Abby in an album, he would say, "I don't know her," even as she was sitting right there with him. He said the woman in front of him wasn't Abby, that the real one had gone away and started a new life. One day, when no one else was around, he said to her, "I don't know how you're doing it, how you're convincing everyone you're Jesse and Mabel's mother, but I know you're not who you say you are." But he recognized everyone else. It turns out that Jacob had Capgras syndrome, and it was only the second time ever that someone had gotten it from encephalitis. It's a delusion where you can't identify people, and the other guy who got it from encephalitis, he also couldn't recognize his wife. It's known as imposter syndrome because the person suffering from it is sure that a person or object is an imposter. Like, they might even think that their own apartment is somehow a secret replacement double. Although I use the term double or lookalike loosely because Jacob thought the real Abby Morgan had different eyes, hair, and height. He could see that the one sitting in front of him matched the one in all of their old pictures, but he simply thought they were different people and he couldn't be argued with. When Abby was able to answer all of Jacob's questions about his favorite things, he thought it was suspicious rather than satisfying, like, how did she do that trick? When she reminded him about the birth of their second child, he said it was an amazing day and he wished she'd been there to see it. When Jacob finally did relent and accept that he had to put up with Abby's presence, he considered her someone who had been appointed by the state to watch him. A doctor told her once during all of this that in 80% of cases, the person who develops imposter syndrome had previously thought about leaving the person they later deem an imposter. You can imagine how Abby took that news. Here she was by Jacob's side for almost a year when he was in a coma for 6 months of it, completely devoted. But she was suddenly asking herself if the little issues they'd had before the incident were actually much bigger than she was admitting, like the time she forgot to thank him during her Emmy speech. Was there a chance he'd wanted to leave her? Abby noticed that other people started treating her the way Jacob saw her. In rehab, she wasn't invited to therapy sessions the way other partners were. Because he didn't see her as his partner, no one treated her like one. She says the worst part of all of it was the lack of attention from this man who had once deeply loved her.
I'd do anything to get his attention, because the thing that was shocking to me was the loss of attention. You know, it was the arrival of a friend and you'd say, "Thanks very much. Could you leave the room, please? I'd like to be with my friends." Or, you know, or a family member saying, "I need to be with my family now. Could you go?" And it was very perverse to suddenly be on the outside of my life looking in, I guess.
Then to make things worse, Abby discovered she had stage 3 breast cancer, a rare fast-moving kind, almost a year after Jacob had entered the hospital. One day, when her head was bald thanks to the chemotherapy, he touched the back of it and said it was flat, like Abby Morgan's. But he still wasn't willing to admit to himself that they were the same person. She said his reluctant acceptance of her attempts at affection made her feel like that woman at church who cooks for the preacher just a little too often. Finally, when Jacob was able to come home, he and Abby slept in different beds, tried to make awkward conversation over dinner, and watched nonstop, repeated episodes of Friends. The doctor said Jacob might like losing himself in the fantasy world where he knows everyone and everything gets resolved at the end. Abby said the theme song was always playing in the house, and she would sometimes find herself thinking, "This is the song that I will murder you to." So there's some murder for you, true crime fans. Abby said she considered poison or suffocation, but had seen enough TV to know that she wouldn't be able to get away with it. But she was tired of not being recognized, never being hugged, and living with this person who didn't know the expectations for how they like to live their life together. He didn't wear his cool clothes anymore. He couldn't take her to Italy anymore. Imagine having built a world together over 20 years, knowing each other's preferences and weird quirks, and then have it all crumble one day. But this new version of Jacob was nice, at least. A friend said after dinner one night, "Well, he's not Jacob, but I quite like this guy." Jacob didn't charm everyone he met anymore. He didn't talk to the kids when the kids wanted to be talked to, and he'd fall asleep in the middle of doing anything thanks to his cocktail of drugs. But he was improving. At therapy, he said he felt guilty for letting this new person take care of him, but that he did love her, even if she wasn't the real Abby. Eventually, after Abby's cancer was chemoed away and cut out, Jacob relented. Abby felt it one day, his cautious acceptance. He told his doctor, "The evidence is overwhelming. It's like, in the face of all the facts, despite her not looking like the real Abby Morgan to him at all, he had to accept her." Abby hated herself for being embarrassed of their showcase of what she called human fragility. This man who maybe only gave in because he was tired of fighting his brain, this woman everyone felt sorry for because of it, and then she went and got cancer on top of being forgotten by her partner. I can't imagine the loneliness of what she was going through, with people actually saying things to her like, "It would have been better if he died." Abby gave an interview in June 2022 where she says Jacob has made remarkable improvements. They were actually able to take a family vacation to Italy together with the kids, and eventually Jacob could get himself to the bathroom instead of peeing in a bottle or wearing a diaper. He'll still need care for the rest of his life. Abby says she understands now that there are different kinds of love, and the one she feels for Jacob now is something like the way you feel about your children. She feels relief when he's tucked in, safe and sound at night in their house. 3 years after Jacob collapsed that day in the bathroom, they finally got married, a thing Abby had wanted for their whole relationship, but Jacob had been previously reluctant about. She says she forgives Jacob, but she'll never forget that she was the one he forgot. I'd love to know your thoughts on this case. Have you ever heard of this kind of delusion? And would you be able to care for someone who treated you like an imposter? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.